Hello and welcome to another Monkey Gaming podcast. Today we're doing something slightly unusual. I'm here with Stuart, the usual host of the show, and I thought we'd just we'd interview you about your experiences, you know, gaming.
Gaming wise, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So how are you doing?
Absolutely fine, James. It's Friday, so off my work after tonight for the weekend.
Almost there.
Yeah,
just a little bit
there.
More. Just five more podcasts to get through and done.
Oh, didn't see that. How are you, James? You all right as well?
Yeah, I'm not bad. I'm not bad. So I thought we could just, you know, today maybe just go through gaming from your perspective, you know, just discuss how it's been for you, what the challenges and the unique aspects of it have been. And so I suppose, I mean, I know we've discussed this a lot before, but maybe we should begin with games that you played when you were a kid, you know, your first experiences with gaming and what that meant for you and how that developed.
Yeah, I mean, basically, believe it or not, I have actually played games for over 20 years. I started playing games when I was 7, and it was my uncle actually introduced me to the Sega Mega Drive 2.
Nice.
And it was the first game I ever played was Street Fighter. And my uncle is completely sighted, so it did take him a wee while just to take me through how the game was. I mean, but there was only ABC on the Mega Drive 2, wasn't there, James?
Mm,
so you had A was a jab, B was a more hefty jab, if you like. C was in the knockout punch. And when you press the start, you would move on to the same thing, but in kicking form. So I started playing Street Fighter because it was a very basic kind of game. You know, you didn't have to, you wouldn't have to climb walls like you were with Sonic the Hedgehog. You wouldn't have to, you know, pick anything up, anything like that. It was just you fighting an opponent in a combat arena sort of thing.
Which character was always your favourite? Did you have one particular...
It used to be Honda or Balrog. Honda was a sumo wrestler, and Balrog was a boxer. And again, it was my uncle who actually had to describe all the different characters. You know, like he would tell me, right, you're fighting Ryu, and Ryu's a karate man. You're fighting, let me think, Blanka, and he had a special move for it. It was like, was he like a robot, James?
Blanka's this big green jungle.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the Hulk. He's like this crazy monster dude.
Right, so visually, we didn't quite get that far, but, you know, Blanka, he had a special move where he electrocuted you.
Oh, God, that is so annoying. That one was so annoying.
And like he says, like, Dalsum, you're fighting him, and he's got big, stretchy arms, so he was harder to get close to.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really had to, for the first while I played Street Fighter, I actually had my uncle, or it was more my cousin, that sat with me. So, yeah, that was the Street Fighter angle. I ended up then going on... from the Sega Mega Drive as well, believe it or not, I actually used to even play some levels of Sonic the Hedgehog. I couldn't never get very far, but again, because the design of the Sega was such a basic, you know, the fundamentals on it were quite basic in terms of the very easy levels of Sonic the Hedgehog, I was able to get through the first few levels on Sonic 1, Sonic 2, Sonic 3. And again, Darren, my cousin, he was always there just to help me along, if need be, at the very start.
You've mentioned Darren helping you along by describing it, like with the Street, for example, being telling you, you know, what the characters look like. I'm wondering how, with Sonic maybe specifically, how much of your enjoyment of the game was derived purely from what you could hear, and how much of it was based on his description?
I wanted it to start with was on his description, because, I mean, you knew when you were jumping, when you were pressing A, B and C to jump, because you would hear, you know, boing, boing, and then, but then, I think with Sonic, you would press the down arrow on the cross, and then if you pressed A, B or C, you would actually spin, and I didn't know what that sound meant, you know, when it was spinning around, I can't even make the noise, but, you know, you were doing this, it was the spinning sound, and I'd say, Darren, what am I doing? You know, what's Sonic actually doing there?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you jump on top of an animal, you'd hear it going, doo, to let you know you'd killed.
That's a very good impression. Yeah, they're going to think we edited in the actual sound.
That was me, honestly, there. But, so, you know, all that sort of thing. And you knew when you were picking up a ring, for example, because you'd hear a ringing noise. But I remember saying to Darren at the start, when I was hitting all these rings, is that telephones I'm hearing, Darren? He says, no, you're picking up rings, which is part of the game, so the input was fantastic. But with Sonic, what happened was, because I could only get through the first maybe one or two levels, you know, in a lot of cases, because it did get harder.
Yeah.
The enjoyment was great, but again, there was only so much playability there. You know, where with Street Fighter, you could just go back to it again and again and again because you knew you were going to complete it at some point. With Sonic, I knew I was never going to be able to do that.
I see, okay.
But what Darren ended up saying, it was just by accident. I was just muck he I used to love listening to Darren playing it because Darren could get to, like in Sonic 2, Death Egg was the final zone. And so like, you know how they do it on YouTube where they do like different, you'll get somebody actually commentating on what they're doing on a game. So Darren was actually doing that with me 22 years ago, and it was just fantastic to sit and listen to Darren play the games. I got as much enjoyment out of that as I did out of actually doing the thing myself,
That's
funnily enough.
interesting, because that's there's the whole industry of Let's Plays now on YouTube, where people just listen or watch other people play games. So it's interesting how we can, as you say, almost get as much enjoyment from someone else, engaging with it as we can from engaging with it ourselves.
It's funny because we were talking about going slightly off the point, but it's just we were talking about StarCraft, weren't we? And there's a YouTube commentary on StarCraft, and to start with, I listened to it and I thought I could maybe get into this, but then as the game goes on, I had no idea what
Oh, really? Is
they
it
were
because they
talking
just
about.
get
And
so,
I get, I think it gets technical and but way back then, Darren was able to just describe things so simply, even at the age of 7, 8 year old. And with Sonic, what happened was I actually ended up getting as much enjoyment out of playing Sonic because the accident I picked up the second remote. You know how Tails always followed Sonic around? And Tails could never die. I must have got killed about 10,000 times on one level by Dr. Robotnik with spike bombs. And it was great. Tails just came back alive and followed Sonic quite the thing. So, and at some points, I was actually helping Darren by accident. I'd maybe hit Dr. Robotnik purely by accident. And Darren, well done, Stuart, you've just hit him again.
You've got to wonder what the idea was behind that Tails gameplay mechanic, don't you? Did they expect people to be, to be helping out the main player? Because it's unusual, isn't it? Because usually you'd have both characters being able to be killed and having a limited amount of lives. But the fact that Tails was always able to come back, it kind of did make it more accessible, didn't it?
It kind of did, and it was purely by accident, I would bet you, way, but I think it was just a pure accidental. But and maybe just to have a kind of two player, because could you play two player in Sonic? Not.
Not in the original, like in Sonic 2, I don't think you could unless it was
No.
Sonic and Tails. So you had to be those guys later on, maybe, but I've forgotten actually. You have to get back to me on that one.
But it's just that it was a good because remember in like Sonic 3, Tails was able to fly a lot more and he can actually lift you up. And by accident, I'd lift Darren up and maybe fly him over a certain bit he was struggling with. We thought, oh, thanks, Stuart, you've just. But then one day I lifted him up and I was flying and I dropped him and he landed on spikes and he used his. So I wasn't popular that day,
Oh, what a terrible accident.
I know. So the arguments we used to have was excellent, but again, it didn't matter to me that I was playing as Tails because I was just having as much fun. Because it felt as though I was doing the level. I mean, I really wasn't, but I was doing the level. It felt as though I was doing the level as much as Darren. And sometimes actually, accidentally, one time jumped on an extra life bit by accident for him. So, it was great just to actually feel as though I was helping. I mean, again, yeah, the other game I loved for the Sega was Streets of Rage. Have you ever played
Streets
Streets
of
of
Rage, yeah,
Rage?
classic, all-time classic.
Again, the level was so basic. All you were doing was walking forward through streets, sometimes backwards. You'd have to turn around to hit baddies that were behind you. But when you hit a baddie, again, this is probably purely by accident, but when you hit a baddie with your character, I always used to love going Max, and who was a wrestler, and when you hit the character, it made a different sound to when the body was actually hitting you. So again, I was getting a fully immersive. So if like a motorbike was coming towards you again, it would make a completely different sound. I'd have to use a avoidance tactics to. And by the way, these games, I know I sound as though I know what I'm talking about, but these took years of sitting every day at a Sega and just playing it endlessly. But again, it was great because I was enjoying the same level of gameplay at the time, and I'll stress that at the time, I was enjoying more or less the same level of gameplay as what my friends cited, friends were.
And for you, I mean,
So.
the essence of a game is like a challenge, isn't it? It's a
Yep.
restriction. It's something that you do that is, you know, involves rules. And for you, I'd imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but that experience, it was much more of a discipline. You know, it was much harder, right, to actually engage with it. Because I mean, if like an 8-year-old sits down, they know what a Sega is. You know, they just start to play. But for you, it was something that you had to, you know, teach yourself and
You
learn
had to
and
learn,
tame.
yeah. But actually, in a way, it wasn't though, I actually didn't teach myself anything. It was actually just, I wanted to play. I was fascinated by the whole gaming side of it. So it wasn't a chore. It wasn't like I was really, straining to teach myself anything. It just came, it was just a flowing sort of. But again, the other way of looking at it was with the harder Sega games, maybe like Desert Striker. I mean, that was a great helicopter game.
Desert Strike. I don't think I ever played that one.
I ended up, there was one bit I couldn't, it was more visual, but again, you're only using ABC and the cross to fly a helicopter around shooting things, and you knew pretty much when you, because you'd hear things blowing up and it made a different sound when you got hit. It was more visual, and but my cousin could still direct me, but games did end up getting really, really hard. Like things like Aladdin and things I could never ever play because the level of, the visuals, it was just too much. When it got to Sonic and Knuckles, it was just so hard because you had to climb up things. Even in the first level, I couldn't even get past the first level on Sonic and Knuckles, and I just thought, oh, the games are now.
See,
And that was about 1995.
95, so still very firmly in the 2D era then, heavy.
Yes, yeah, still the Sega. But then the Sony PlayStation came along, and it was that changed the ballpark because they were able to do so much more with the PlayStation sound wise.
Was that kind of a landmark moment for you when you realized that maybe modern games wouldn't be as accessible as they once had been?
Yeah, and it was more of a frustration because again, my friends and things are in the playground talking about these games, and I just before I was able to join in, but then I had no idea what they were talking about because I was getting left behind in terms of accessibility,
I see,
in terms of games.
At this point, were you still playing with your cousin? Was it still the
Yep.
same setup?
Oh yeah, we even used to play FIFA games for on the Sega and things, but on the
Always
Sega.
a rite of passage as a young man, isn't
That's
it,
yes,
to
the
win at
FIFA.
FIFA?
Yep, FIFA 95, FIFA, and we used to play each other all the time, all the arguments we used to have with Rangers and Celtic, and just
I can
unbelievable.
imagine.
That's we'll no go there. But and again it would be up to Darren to kind of tell me when I'd scored a goal and things. But it was good that I've been very, very lucky to have that kind of interaction, or I wouldn't be playing, probably wouldn't be playing games as much as I am today. I mean, with the PlayStation, I was just the excitement when that thing came out was for me of oh, there wasn't any better feeling because one of my relatives had one, and it was actually we were playing a football game, and the thing was actually commentating. So I actually knew because I was such an avid football fan. At the time Rangers had like Gascoigne and Loudrop, so as soon as Gascoigne had the ball, Gascoigne passes to Loudrop, and I'd make errant passes and all the rest of it, but the thing would be telling, oh, an errant pass, a mistake by Gascoigne, and you're going, no, Darren's got the ball. So, and the commentating, he still had to tell me how to tackle, and get the controls right, but once that was done, the sheer magnitude of things they were able to do with the PlayStation was brilliant. A game, Tekken, which I think you'll have played,
Yeah,
won't you, James?
Tekken's a classic.
Classic series. Tekken 2 was always kind of my
Did you ever
favourite.
play Tekken Tag Tournament?
I did
I
on
love
the
that one.
PlayStation 2. I didn't quite enjoy that as much because I was used to like looking forward to Tekken 3. I only looked forward to because there was a whole host of new characters, like Eddie Gordo and all that. And Tekken Tag Tournament just seemed to be revisiting the same characters as
Yeah,
much as.
fair point.
But as again, just because I'm visually impaired, that doesn't mean to say I just see myself as a gamer, like everybody else. It's just, again with the PlayStation, the problem I end up having was sighted people. They wanted the games to become more visually stimulating, if that's the right word, and they wanted the mechanics to be more challenging, and you'd have to press more buttons, if I'm making sense, on the, you know, the PlayStation control.
The input became much more complex as time went on.
Yep, and you know, there was so much more design where you had to actually navigate through things. Even in fighting games, you had to, you know, there was a story mode in Tekken eventually where you had to jump, you had to get past fire and everything.
Yeah, I remember that. That wasn't as good as the regular mode.
No, I think it ruined it. But it just,
a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people feel that way.
Interesting that I'm the only one then.
It was that point. Because I mean, the first three Tekkens were, everyone loved them, but then after that, it got a bit shaky. Yeah. It became a bit too complex to just throw everything in the kitchen sink.
That was it. And again, a game I used to love was Knockout Kings on boxing on the PlayStation. And again, they made that so difficult and defensive, because with defense, all you really needed to do with the first sort of Knockout Kings series was you just press, you know, the L1. And that would block to your head, L2 would block to the body, and you knew you didn't really have to do much more. But then they ended up doing, you had to actually use the analog sticks on the DualShock controllers.
Yeah.
You end up having to use them to defend, and it was so, the defend had to, you know, you'd turn it to the right to put your right arm up, and so you'd actually have to see where the opponent was physically targeting your head and body. And so again, the frustration was just immense. And it ended up that the games got so difficult and so complex that even the PlayStation and the Xbox totally lost their appeal, because there was just games coming out that were, I knew right away, I've not even going to attempt to buy these, it's just not going to be playable.
Do you think they became less accessible because developers were less concerned about making them accessible, or do you think they became less accessible just because, you know, now that they had more tools to do more complex stuff they wanted to?
Yep.
Do you think it was a conscious move away from making them easy, or do you think it was...
It was a conscious move, and as I said earlier, I think it was a conscious move of making them less easy, and to be honest, I don't think a single thought went into accessibility in any of the games that I used to play on PlayStation or Sega. I hope I'm wrong saying that. I might very well be. But, you know, I think the game cues, the audible game cues and things were, you know, just something that I personally strive to pick up on. I think that there was no intention of making games accessible on these consoles at the time. And I think, as I said earlier, I think when they were easier, they were fine. But as the cited gaming community and, you know, the developers, I think they felt had a duty to make games more difficult and more challenging as the series of games progressed, if this is making sense.
No, I'd agree with you completely. People are very, very keen to have games introduce new features and new mechanics that often require really, really specific inputs. Like the Assassin's Creed series, I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have,
The first one was quite an elegant, simple idea. You were an assassin in ye olden times.
Wow.
And you climb buildings and stuff. And it's about, you know, it's about parkour. Like, it's about climbing buildings and running along beams and stuff and jumping about. And you have to kill, like, historical figures and stuff. And that was the game. Like, that was the idea. You could sum it up in one sentence. But the later ones introduced like more RPG elements. Like, there were horse racing bits, and there were like tower defense bits where you'd like construct a base and stuff. And it became so complex and contrived that I think they kind of lost sight of what made the game excellent.
Fun.
And I think a lot of games are definitely becoming that way. You know, people hold up games like Sonic and Streets of Rage as the quintessential gaming experience in those genres. You know, nowadays, they're a lot less iconic, and maybe that's because nowadays the games are more complex.
Yes, and I think maybe a lot of the games, I saw it coming in on PlayStations, actually, you know, with things like Soviet Strike, which was a kind of helicopter, you know, Die Hard, for example, the violence of the games now as well, you know, especially when you're looking at things like maybe Call of Duty, I think that's supposed to be very...
Hitman
and things.
Hitman, very violent.
And you didn't have all that with the Sega. You know, you just had a basic kind of, whether it was football, wrestling, you know, Street Fighter. You know, they were fighting games, but you wouldn't say they were that violent, would you?
Yeah, it's interesting how we're surrounded kind of in the media by violence. I mean, it's not even just games, is it? It's like TV shows and films and stuff. Like Game of Thrones is insanely violent. And those books as well, they were crazy violent. I'm wondering, actually, do you think that that shift towards more violent media, at least in games, do you think it's because the audience has shifted away from... whereas before with the old Nintendos and Segas, maybe they thought they were kind of toys for children almost, and now they're entertainment devices for adults? Or do you think that they always would have been violent, it's just they didn't have the tools necessary to create such a visual spectacle?
I don't know. I think it's just society nowadays. It's like it's gotten more streetwise, isn't it?
Cynical. We've become hungrier for blood.
I actually almost think we have, because, like, you know, like when we had the PlayStations, right? Now, Darren, I just couldn't play Grand Theft Auto. I mean, you know how you, like, follow the arrow? You're supposed to follow the arrow and do missions. Now, Darren just used to give me the controls, and I would go around, try to shoot things, and all that. But there was no fun in it, because there was no logic to the game. It was just me driving around, and if I accidentally got out of the car, for example, I couldn't get back to it. And, you know, so it wasn't a great experience. But Darren knew that game was an 18?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
You're lucky if Darren was
18. They were lucky it got an 18.
Exactly. And Darren, actually, my cousin used to read what they were, you know, and they were swearing, and there was very explicit, you know, content. Even though you just used to hear him, you know, doing the phone, you know, you just hear
the media used to love the term a murder simulator.
They loved it.
GTA.
Aye, and they absolutely loved it. And it was just, you know, that, I mean, again, we shouldn't have even been playing that at
How old were you at this point?
I think I was about 11 or 12. You're lucky if Darren was 10. And, you know, we shouldn't have been playing this. But, you know, that's what's happening nowadays. The kids are playing these 18 or yeah, I remember another one, and we really shouldn't have been playing this one. Duke Nukem, Time to Kill.
Duke Nukem, yeah.
Just absolutely insane. and again, Darren was about 9, and I was about 11, and we, you know, and we were just in hoots at some of the
childhood,
things.
What a childhood, man. Oh, you know, so you think we're all being influenced by these, like, hyper-violent games at a young age, and then grown up to...
I think so.
To want that more in our entertainment.
Yeah, but even you see it in films. You know, how many 9-year-olds are watching 18 Certificate kind of...
Yeah.
You know, it does happen. Games more than films, I think, but, you know, it's just an absolute craze. And, you know, I bet you the school playground are just fully... I mean, even like Kevin, another cousin of mine at 8-year-old, was playing Call of Duty games. And,
yeah.
You know, just madness.
Well, even recently I've played so many 8-year-olds online at Call of Duty.
Mad.
It's overrun. It's,
I mean, the certificate just doesn't mean anything, does it?
It's kind of hard as well, because at least for our generation, our parents weren't really... They didn't really engage with games that much, did they? So they didn't really understand them. So they weren't really able to vet them that well, were they? They didn't really understand what was going on, what was acceptable, what wasn't. And I mean, I know there have been studies done that suggest that there's absolutely no correlation between violence in games and actual violence. But maybe as kids playing those things, we did, you know, become a bit desensitized to that kind of stuff.
I wonder, I mean, there is another reason, actually. I mean, my cousin was a wee bit of a, you know, he was almost nagging his parents for stuff. Hope he doesn't mind me saying that. It was just the stages we were at. And there was a WWF game at the time called Warzone, where it introduced, you were hitting people over the head with tellies, and you could burst their face open.
You're hitting
them with, you know, frying pan, just absolute madness. And my mum looked at us playing this one day, and there was blood over the screen, and she says, "Why is your mum letting you play this, Darren?" And Darren says, "Well, she's just buying me the games to keep me out of here." So, you know, it was just... there was that element as well.
WWF is my new mum.
That's what it was
like. TV is my parent,
But again, the Warzone, I used to follow the wrestling, and I was actually able to play this game just as well with my cousin. I was able to do cage matches, I was able to, you know, randomly pick up weapons just by accident, but the thrill of hitting somebody with a chair was great. And it was just, the reason was, the PlayStation, again, all the wrestlers made different sounds. You know, they had the voice, you had the voices element in there.
That's interesting.
So, you know, I used to go Bret Hart all the time, but the Undertaker would make a different sound to The Rock, when I was hitting them, you know, so I knew exactly. And, you know, when I was doing a move, you'd hear the commentator go, shoulder breaker by Bret Hart, you know, crucifix by Bret Hart. So you knew it, the depth of knowledge and commentary in that game was so great that I was able to have a go at that as well. And But then again, when you got to the SmackDown series, they took the commentating out because people didn't like it. They took it out of the first two SmackDowns. They took the commentating away, and the game pace ended up being so, you know, Warzone and Attitude and things like that were very slow paced, but it still had the sound of the wrestlers. And the SmackDown games, the pace was so much faster, and there was no voice sound at all. You just heard someone hitting a canvas.
That's crazy. That seems really weird.
And again. And that's what happened. And again, it's like it now. And it's just, again, you're looking at it going, how frustrating that you were able to do so much and then they go and ratchet a game up purely for the sighted community. No thought. I honestly don't think there was any thought of accessibility at all.
I'm sure there wasn't. I mean, they're motivated by profit, aren't they? Exist to make money. Yeah. Without money, there would be no game. So I suppose they see it as what is going to sell the most amount of copies, which is really unfortunate.
I mean, again, I've spoke to you about this before. There was another, and I'm not, you know, trying to knock the gaming developers at all. It's just, I just have to go in my experiences here. And one of my real bugbears is that Football Manager hasn't been made accessible to visually impaired people, especially now with screen reading technology and voiceover on the iPads. But I remember Pro Evolution Soccer, I used to love that game because it had a coach mode, so you could be the manager and just, you'd have to memorise your team, you know, who was in your team. So you did need sighted help to start with or at different points throughout the game. But the majority was you picking the team, you going through the tactical, you know, scenarios and changing tactics in the game. But the computer actually did all the football side of it. You know, you wouldn't actually have to control your players. The computer would be doing
it. It was all automated.
Yeah, and you were just making the decisions as and when you, again, the commentating, you knew when the other team had scored goals or you knew when things. The practice I had, I knew when things weren't going right with my team, if you could believe that. So, and again, in the later Pro Evolution Soccer, they took the coach mode out because apparently it wasn't popular. Among it's the Konami faithful, and
no longer exist incidentally because the company's basically dissolved.
Has it?
Well, at least in terms of games, they don't make games anymore.
Wow.
There was a whole drama, and have you heard of Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the kind of the virtuoso, the diva designer behind that was a guy called Hideo Kojima.
Oh yeah, okay.
And they had a really big fallout with him, and so he left the company. They kind of forced him out. They said a lot of nasty stuff behind his back, and essentially, they're withdrawing from the industry. So yeah, they're good because they also have bathhouses or something. They have like little. There's something called a pachinko machine in Japanese arcades. It's like a kind of like a slot machine, and that's where they make most of their money. Not actually from the games, not from stuff like Pro Evo. So they're kind of.
I can't believe that. Actually,
It was a really weird phenomenon actually to see it happen. They've been very strange about it, but I guess they don't really. Again, they don't care about this market because it's not making them the bulk of their money. Just like developers often don't even have a second thought about what might make a game accessible because that's not where they see their money.
And exactly, and that's that because I used to love the series and right up from like, you know, 2017, and this isn't the only series, you know, I've already spoke about the WWE games and things, but the highlight of my year was waiting on this Pro Evolution Soccer game coming out in October, and I went and bought one of the more recent ones recently and tried to play it. They took the coach mode away, and I mean, my dad, I suspect he was going mental because I'd write to them and tell them, you know, what they've done here, how they've made your, you know, gaming experience. They've destroyed it, basically.
Yeah.
Something that I thought was so, the hours I wasted on that game was criminal. And it was just, but one voice just wouldn't make any difference, I don't think.
And this, just to be clear, the coach mode was accessible through your screen reader technology?
It wasn't. It was actually just me memorising.
Oh, I see. So that was
a set of instructions. You know, the game was completely inaccessible. It was just basically I had the because I was so used to doing games, I used to memorise. Right, you'll go two taps of the cross to the right, and then press the X, and then, you know, you'll go down another three and press the X, and then you're into your team lineup. And if you press R1, it'll land you in coach mode. And it was just very, very complicated. I'll not go into, but there was a way I was able to do it after sighted assistance to get me started. There was a way I was able to memorise. Incidentally, I don't know if you know this, James, but I've not picked up a games console in about maybe 3 years. Okay. And now, though, the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One have text-to-speech software.
Do they?
In the device now, which I know where you're pricking your ears up there, aren't you?
I actually had no idea. That's very interesting.
I saw it online, and I was ready to run out and buy one right away, but actually all it's doing is actually just navigating the main... You must have like a main interface without games.
Oh, yeah, the main menu, yeah. So
it's doing that, and I think you can maybe some chat facilities and things are spoken by the screen reader, but the game side, I think gaming developers still need to actually make their games interact with the actual software. So, you know, I could put Pro Evolution Soccer on it now, and it wouldn't work because the developer haven't actually made the thing interact with the screen reader.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it is there, but it's like they're saying, well, we've got it there, and Sony's great. I mean, I've got a, completely off the point, but I've got a talking Sony smart TV in the house that has the same software built in. So it's coming for free, but it really is up to every gaming developer to actually want to make their game compatible with it.
Definitely, definitely. There has been a small move towards accessibility in mains, like really big budget games. Like I know a lot of this isn't really applicable, but for example, like for people who can't hear that well, there are closed captions, so not just dialogue but also
I didn't know that.
Like sound effects like muffled thumping or twigs snapping, and it'll come up in text on the screen. There is now in a few games a colorblind mode, so if you can't see certain colors, they'll let you switch the colors so you can see that more easily. And there are a few concessions being made, but it's not enough, is it?
It's not good enough.
I mean, it's kind of encouraging, I suppose, that there's a few developers are heading in that direction. Maybe
it is. I mean, I think in terms of I've told James this many a time, but I was at a technology event last year, and one of the people on stage says, in terms of accessibility and technology, there has never been a better time to be alive. And I'm going to come on to he's talking about iPads and smartphones, you know, and tablets specifically, I think, and even computers, because computers have got their own free screen readers now as well. But I went away thinking, okay, you said there's never been a better time to be alive, but when you look at the games side of things, accessibility, I still feel, is way, way lagging behind.
Not enough of a priority.
Again, I'd be interested to hear other people's views on it, but personally, I think we are still way behind. The iPads and iPhones, especially, that's where I do all my gaming now, is actually on an iPad or an iPhone, because of the screen reading technology and the fact that there are... It's more to do with like projects, but there are people out there who are making it their sole, you know, mission in life to make games exclusively for, or, you know, playable by both visually impaired and sighted people alike.
Yeah, uh-huh. And actually, I mean, we did one of those at the last show, didn't we?
We did a Blind Legend.
I'd be interested to know how entertaining you feel that game is compared to something like Sonic or Street Fighter on the old consoles.
I think I'm actually more entertained by it because, I mean, there's a bit I'm stuck on a Blind Legend at the moment. There's a bit when rocks fall on you and I'm stuck and I can't get past it.
Okay.
And I've tried it many a time and I just can't. I could get so far and I'm stuck. But I know that where Sonic, I just knew I was only going to get to a certain level, and then, you know, that you'd either have to climb a wall or go down tubes or something, and I could never do it. I could never find the tube to climb or the wall, the tube to go down or the wall to climb. Or,
but with a Blind Legend,
you have
the tools.
I know, yeah. I've got, there's nothing to stop me, it's just my own...
A matter of perseverance.
Silliness, or, you know, there's something I'm not doing, there's definitely something I'm not doing right, and I'm frustrated to the max with it, but I'm going to go back and have another go at it, because
that's
I know...
That's the sign of a good game, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Even like games that's just made compatible with voiceover, there's role-playing games like Silver Sword and King of Dragon Pass, things like great games. And I know there's some, my characters are dying, and there's some, it might be that I've maybe left, maybe, you know, spell points that I've not recharged or something. I mean, we'll go into the mechanics, but I get, there's something I'm not doing, but I know I can go back and put the thing right or restart and do it all again. And that's as much a challenge now. I'm actually enjoying it more than, say, playing Sonic and...
Yeah.
Although I'd love, as we might be doing a podcast on, I would love to get my hands on a console and get a hold of the Street Fighter again.
Yeah.
So, really what I'm trying to say is that with the advancements now in smart technology, especially, you know, with the lengths that Apple's gone to make their devices accessible, the potential for new, exciting, challenging, accessible games for visually impaired people, I think the potential's endless, but it's developing all the time. And again, it is up to either developers making their own audio games, where you have a company like Tickin' Blue does that, where they have their own built-in instructions and gestural language, or it's a case of like their own playing games like Silver Sword, the developer actually just implements the voiceover screen reading technology. He just designs it in with his gaming engine and it works flawlessly there as well. So it's huge. The smartphone and the tablet has absolutely massive potential. The PlayStation and Xbox, I'm really encouraged by what you've just told me about, you know, the game, the bits for the hearing impaired in games. So maybe we're not as far away from more accessible games as I thought.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely, there has been a push towards it in recent years. And I think as the technology improves, you know, so too does the ability for the developer to make the game more accessible. You know, I think maybe, I mean, who knows, in 10, 20 years there could be technology that lets a screen reader actually just tell you what's happening on screen. You know, it doesn't just read text, it actually describes it. Like, maybe AI is gonna increase massively in capacity. We have no real way of predicting it.
No idea.
But I just to quickly touch on, I would be interested to see, because I mean, sound design, I've always said, is the most underrated aspect of any modern game, because it can really, really be the difference between making something incredibly immersive or just, you know, not believable. And I'd be interested in what kind of middle ground there is between a game that has visual stimulus but can also be played purely from an oral perspective. There's a game that came out recently called The Witness.
Okay.
And so it's a puzzle game that's set on an island, and the puzzles are, you know, primarily visual. It's like you've got a maze and you kind of control a snake that goes through it and stuff. But there are some puzzles, and slight spoilers for The Witness if you're listening, there are some puzzles where you're in a maze that's like a hedge maze, and so it's you're your character, you know, and it's like a 3D space, and the maze, there are many paths through. Really solving that maze isn't difficult, but then you get to the end, and you have to replicate your path through the maze, but sometimes that's not enough, and so what you have to do is you have to only take the path through the maze that doesn't, or does, I forget which, make a crunching noise.
Yeah.
So, like, you'll be walking, and if you hear a crunching noise, that's a signal to either go back or keep going. And so you know which way you're meant to go based on what you hear and not what you see.
Which actually sounds variant. So that's The Witness.
The Witness, yeah. I think it is fairly inaccessible
from most
other aspects, because it is primarily visual. A lot of it's based on, you know, symmetrical shapes and stuff.
I mean, you see that, like, a game like that, I mean, God knows how that could be made in any way accessible. It's just that there are games out there that...
One maybe that utilises more puzzles, like the oral one, and less purely visual ones.
Yeah, and you do get that there are maze games for iOS that can be completely through sound from a visually impaired person's point of view. I think there's Blind Earth Escapes one, which is more of a kid's maze game, but there's a really good one called Kura Kura Maze, which You know, the further in the mazes you get, the harder they get, and so, you know, yeah. if you hit a wall, it makes a thudding sound, and mm-hmm. so there's developments, I think, happening all the time.
And is that a fairly recent phenomenon, people making purely audio games?
I don't think so. PC, there's a really good website called audiogames.net, and people have been making them for Windows for donkeys, you know, way back to, you know, the old Windows operating systems back in 1998 and things.
Really?
You know, there are games.
Oh, wow, I had no idea.
And they make them compatible with screen readers. So there's one that's been under development for about 10 years. And it's like, you know, Warcraft, which yeah, I've spoke yeah. to James about. But what the guy's done is he's just called it Sound RTS at the moment. It's just Sound Real-Time Strategy. And what he's done is he's actually tried to combine World of Warcraft with Command and Conquer. So you're getting the two elements kind of crossing, and it's a nightmare to, not in a bad way, it's just so, there's so much to the game. But again, I'm not great with computers, I'll be perfectly frank, and I'm good with Macs, but not Windows. So those games, in a lot of cases, I kind of struggle with. I kind of tend to go towards the iPad more.
Would you say Apple's made a much bigger push to make things accessible than Microsoft have with Windows?
I think so. I think just by going to technology days and events. Because monkey gaming, you know, my main job is to train other visually impaired people on how to use iPhones and things, smart technology. And Windows, I think Apple, I think though maybe the only problem, not the problem, but maybe the only thing is Apple were ahead of the game, if that's making sense. You know, they started it before the other one, like Android and Windows. And to me, just again, remember this is a totally personal point of view, but Android and Windows are still playing catch-up, if you ask me. Google are, though, really, really making a push to try and get things more accessible from their end. So that's why the guy at the technology is saying, in terms of technology, there's never been a better time to be here. But as I say, as gaming developers seem to be not a law unto themselves, but there isn't a law, is there, James, that says you really have to make your game accessible?
There's really no motivation for a lot of them other than to do it because they want to. You know, if it's mm-hmm. if they're beholden to their shareholders, and you can be sure they're going to make the next, you know, first person military shooter, and it's not going to be accessible in any way
whatsoever. So we are dependent on kind of at the moment maybe small time, not small, maybe I don't mean
indie
that in indie developers. I didn't mean that in a derogatory way at all, because like small indie developers or maybe projects, like A Blind Legend was a project where they got funding to actually make the fantastic game that it is. But that's what you're kind of depending on at the moment, or a developer willing when we get in touch with them to say, you know, leave this with me, I'll have a go at it. And most of the time it doesn't work, but it's great on the rare occasions it does work to, you know, just to have another avenue to explore.
Yeah,
in terms of a game.
Absolutely. That was quite comprehensive, wasn't it?
I think we've done well there, yeah.
It was a saga. Yeah. So ultimately, let me ask you then, thinking back to the 90s and thinking about gaming now, is it in a better state now than it was, all things considered?
Definitely, because there's more games and people are aware of more accessibility now. You know, it's just, as I say, in the 90s, I've been lucky, you know, growing up with people that were able to take me through games completely designed for visual stimulus, you know, and it's just by accident that the sounds were there that I was able to cotton on to. I think it maybe helped it in a way that I've never had sight, so I was actually using my other senses a lot more keenly, mm-hmm. I think, if that. So, you know, probably just by accident, I've just picked up a games console one day and never looked back since. But now I look every single day to see where the developments in accessible games are, especially on Apple Viz. They have a whole category of games which are accessible for visually impaired people, and I always look at that to see what new games are out, because again, you just want another you want to be playing new games every day, don't you? You'll be like
Yeah,
that from
I
the
do,
original.
yeah.
Yeah. So we're in a much better state, but there is still, I think there's still quite a ways to go, especially for the big developers, you know, maybe like, you know, Football Manager, Rockstar Games, things like that. The accessibility is non-existent at the moment.
Fair enough. Okay, well, thanks for sharing that with us. I think it's been really interesting.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Hope people have enjoyed it again.
I'll be interested. Hopefully next week we'll be able to do Street Fighter.
I'm hoping so. We've been planning it for a while, and we were going to do it last week and couldn't get the right equipment, TV-wise. But next week I am hoping very, very much that we're able to do Street Fighter, and we'll see how bad I am at it after
we'll
20
out.
Years. We never know, we could maybe even play each other, James, if you've got a couple of controls.
Yeah, I do, I've got two.
So you might have a wee bit of an argument next week on here as well. So, well, as I say, hopefully it's been enjoyable, and we look forward to playing Street Fighter next week.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll be back next week. Okay, well, thanks, Joe.
Yep, thank you very much, James. Well, I'll round us off just by saying thanks very much again for listening, and hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll be back again next week with another podcast.
Oh, and check us out on Twitter.
And as I should have mentioned, check us out on Twitter at MonkeyGamingFSB. So just at MonkeyGaming, F for Foxtrot, S for Sierra, B for Bravo. Okay, thanks again. See you next week.